afternoon and welcome to On The Reading News Analysis right here on Eagle FM. I am your host, Ndafa Happy Juju, and I'll be bringing you the news bulletin from now up until 14:30. Now it's 3 minutes past the hour of 1300 hours, and it's Thursday, the 11th of September, 2025, a midweek afternoon, and with schools on holiday, we know the rhythm of life feels a little different. Now, whether you're strolling through the streets of Katimamuriro, running errands in Omaruru, spending time with family in Khobabas, or resting under the shade in Oshikoku, thank you for choosing Eagle FM today. Now, on this day, we pause to remember September 11, 24 years ago in 2001, 246 people went to sleep in preparation for their morning flights. 2,606 people went to sleep in preparation for work. 343 firefighters went to sleep ready for their shift. 60 police officers went to sleep in preparation for patrol. 8 paramedics went to sleep for morning ahead. None of them saw past 11 a.m. September 11, 2001. In one single moment, life changed forever. This should remind us that life can be lost in an instant. And for that moment, we should make wise choices and show love to our loved ones while they're still alive. As we live and enjoy the breath we take today, let's hold those we love closer. Never take time for granted and carry the lessons of that day. We remember September 11. Now here on the Reading News Analysis, we don't just gaze at the headlines. We slow down and ask the deeper questions. What does this mean for Namibians? How does it shape our lives, our opportunities, and our future? From national policies to local realities, we connect the dots that matter. And of course, your perspective counts. Share your thoughts with us on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, WhatsApp, and also tune in via the Eagle FM website or Eagle FM app, because this show isn't just about us, but it's about you as it is about the news. From the busy energy of Tsumeba to the peaceful evenings of Betani, from the farmlands of Karakara to the wide open spaces of Kalkrind, wherever you are in this Thursday, we are glad to have you with us. This is On The Reading News Analysis. Namibia stories unpacked and connected to the people who live them. Now let's get right into today's news analysis. Today we're analyzing Namibian weapons fueling Western Cape gang violence. Now, according to the Global Initiative Against Transnational Organized Crimes Western Cape Gang Monitor, police and military weapons stolen in Namibia are apparently being smuggled into South Africa, supplying gangs in Cape Town with increasingly deadly firepower. Now, in late August, 9 people happened to have appeared in a window court facing 16 accounts of theft after stealing weapons, including AK-47s from a Namibian military stockpile and attempting to traffic them to South Africa. Now, this follows ongoing investigations by the South African Police Service, SAPS, and the Namibian Police Force, NAMPO, who have been probing the cross-border smuggling of Namibian state firearms since a cage of pistols was seized at the Cape Town traffic stop in 2020. Now, the Western Cape Gang Monitor reports that firearms are hidden in trucks transporting fresh produce such as flowers and fruit, with some trucks fitted with secret compartments able to conceal up to 20 weapons, allegedly. Now, sources indicate the same networks are also used to move illicit diamonds, abalone, and even human cargo. Now, no single gang controls this supply chain, but gangs in the Grazy Park area, including the Junky Funky Kids and the Six Bobs, have been named among recipients. One of the implicated trucking companies has family ties to the JFKs, while Six Bobs leaders are said to have received over 100 firearms in a single 2022 shipment. Now, in February 2025, Western Cape Police Commissioner Thembisile Patekile confirmed that more than 90 firearms traced to Namibia had been seized. A leaked 2023 memo from Namibia Police Commissioner Moritz Narusab revealed that several recovered pistols bore NPW, that is standing for Namibian Police Weapon, markings, proving they were police issue even with serial numbers removed. Now, of course, I am joined in studio by Inspector of the Namibian Police Inspector General, Inspector Joseph Shikongo. Good afternoon,
Inspector General, and it's a pleasure to have you right here on the Radio News Analysis with us.
Yes, good afternoon.
Inspector General, of course, we are hearing from South African news source outlets that weapons are being smuggled in Western Cape, South Africa, via Namibia. Is Inspector, get right into it for us.
Yeah, that's a report that came through the media, more particularly News 24. Of course, we've heard about that report. Yes, we have seen it and we have heard about it. But I wanted to clarify something because people, they are taking this like, these are all Namibian weapons. So, as he suggested, I addressed the nation last night. And indeed, I explained our case. Yes, they might be those weapons that are of Namibian origin, but they are, the report is actually showing or indicating the police and the military weapons, AK-47. So I put it to the nation that the Namibian police has not lost any of the AK-47. So we have all our AK-47 now at disposal. The report that I indicated even this morning is the case of the pistols that went missing. That was around, they were dated 2021.
Yeah.
So, and the criminal case has been since opened. That resulted into the arrest of about six people, six police officers, and two civilians. And they are working in the Namibian police force, working at the Central Depot. And their case is before the court. They went through the court, they are on bail, and the case is ongoing.
When were they arrested?
Well, as I said, this case came a long way. It's not a new case.
Exactly.
Because I heard the people reporting it's like a new case, but it's not a new case. This is an old case of 2021. So we don't have a new case that was opened. So we are investigating that old case.
So what
happened is now that they appeared before the magistrate court. And their case has now been referred to the regional court, Katura Regional Court. And the court is going to sit, or they are going to appear for pre and trial.
Now, Inspector, I think if I get it correctly, this was 83 or so AK-47s that were missing in 2021. Could it be
not AK-47. I indicated you have not lost an AK-47. These were pistols.
Okay, pistols in 2021. Yes. Just give me the correct figure, 81?
I said the initial report was about 96. But then the Inspector General of Police appointed the verification team to go and verify physical on these weapons. And during verification, so it was established that 83 weapons were not accounted for. 13 of them obviously were found.
Okay. We don't want to, of course, jump to conclusions, but perhaps could it be that this missing pistols could be that they are the ones now that are being used or have been caught in Western Cape?
Well, the report in Western Cape is talking about all sorts of weapons, including AK-47. If the report of AK-47 and Namibia has not lost AK-47, how could we believe that these are Namibian weapons? That's what I'm saying. Yes, maybe those people that went missing could be in South Africa. I should also indicate that during the time, the police as an organization is ever reporting cases of private farms that are also getting lost in the hands of individuals or house breaking out of private security companies. Yes, and those are cases that are registered with us. So could be they might end up somewhere else, end up in outside the country, or they are around in the circulation in Namibia. So those are all the areas that we are investigating, and we are more focusing on the transnational organized crime.
Now, Inspector General, this brings us to another situation that is perhaps could be one of the fueling or critical issues. Now, is the police bureaucratic delay in promoting its officers not perhaps fueling or triggering situations like this? Of course, I'm not trying to probe on something, but it's just a matter of asking.
This when you have become a police officer, you become an employee of the state. And we are committed to deliver quality service to the nation. So any police officer or civil servant involving in criminal activities because of promotion, I don't think that justifies anything. Because these people, every producer working for the government or any institution, including yourself, who is working for the media, you are paid. Mm-hmm. And I don't think being a member of the media with the ethics, you are going to report unethically because of your salary.
Mm. Now, there's a thin line, of course, between loyalty and economic difficulties. Are they perhaps not forced to go into situations of, for instance, bribery due to economic constraints?
I must say that we are very lucky people that are employed in the public service or private, or employed in the private sector. We are very lucky, very fortunate. We have a job. We put bread on the table. So I don't think there's anything that's forcing us to be greedy. So we must be satisfied to what we have. And obviously, the government is ever doing its level best to ensure that the condition of service of which is men and women are taken care of. And I think those are facts. Those are realities. So there are countries where you find people today, they are paid. I can guarantee you, the Republic of Namibia, since day one of our independence, we do not have a single day when civil servants were not paid. Mm. I've been working for the government for the past 35 years, and I cannot remember in my individual life of any day or any delay on my payment.
Mm. Now, I hear that, Inspector General, but when we're talking about payment and salary, perhaps sometimes it's not so much enough. How often does the police actually increase salaries of its members? I mean, we talk about also them being understaffed.
The police does not increase any salary of any member. The salary, if you want to ask about the question of increment, that one should be asked from the public service. Because the payment of the civil servant are determined by the Public Service Commission of Namibia. That is, it's not really the police, but if it comes to a promotion, yes, that is the responsibility of the Inspector General. And it is on record that in a period of about 2 years, the Namibian police force has promoted more than 700,000 people at the different levels.
Okay. Inspector General, are there ongoing talks perhaps with the South African police force and in terms also of this global initiative against transnational organized crimes, Western Cape Gang Monitor, to also just give our side of the story? Of course, I know that, Inspector, you've availed yourself through other media outlets, but are there conversations beyond the borders of Namibia to ensure also our side of the story has been had?
I don't know who are the global initiatives. I don't know them. I have never spoken to them. They have never interviewed me. They have never engaged me as Inspector General. I saw the news. But when it comes to the law enforcement, the Namibian Police Force and the South African Police Service, we are in contact as frequently. We are in contact. We are communicating at the highest level and the lowest level. So this investigation, when these guns or farms were reported. So the first thing we did was to request the mutual legal assistance on criminal matters from South Africa. And of course, the African Police Service have been rendering necessary services to the Namibian Police Force for us to be able to get to the conclusion of the matter. So we are not only in that area, but we also collaborate in some other areas, in areas of drug dealings, in areas of fraud cases. I refer, when I was talking this morning, I referred to a case of a Namibian who fled the Windhoek on a fraud case. And this person was arrested in South Africa with the assistance of the South African Police Service. We have also what we call the joint operations along our common border between South Africa and Namibia. So that's, in fact, our relationship between our southern neighbor, very, very sound, northern neighbor, eastern neighbor, our relations are very sound. So therefore, our collaboration on police matters are of the highest level.
Okay. Inspector General, while I still have you online, perhaps, and before I do let you go, just a message to the public in terms of combating crime and, of course, staying away from organized crime as well.
The message to the people of this country, to this great nation, is really just to appeal to them to come forward. If there is any information that they are having regarding crime, be it crime committed in Namibia or be it any transnational or cross-border crimes. So they are welcome to communicate to me. I have my number, always give it to the community. My number once more again is 0811-242874. That is the Inspector General of the Ambient Police Office. My number is open. They can call me. They can call other structure of the Namibian Police Force and share the information so that at the end of the day, we make Namibia a safer country for all.
Correct. Thank you so much, Inspector General Joseph Chikongo, for making time for us right here on the Reader News Analysis. We do appreciate your time.
Eagle FM, thank you very much and have a blessed day. Thank you.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye.
And there we had it from the Inspector General of the Namibian Police Force, that is Joseph Chikongo. And of course, you are tuned into On the Radar News Analysis right here on Eagle FM. Now, should you want to air opinions and ask questions, contributions, 083-288-401 is the number in studio. For now, we pause right here. Take a trip to the marketplace, but we'll be back shortly.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
So not a fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
I want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I am planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary.
On the Radar Analysis, good afternoon. Yes, you are live on air. Yes, good afternoon, sir.
Yes, I'm fine. I would like to ask, the general said that they have, within 2 years, they have promoted close to 700,000.
Just repeat that for me. I didn't hear you.
He alluded that apparently they promoted within 2 years.
Mm.
700,000 people.
Did he say 700 or is it 7,000?
Oh, he said 7,000.
I think that's what I had.
I thought he said 700,000. I was just asking if we have that figure within the Namibian police force.
Mm. Mm. Are you a police officer yourself?
No.
Okay.
Just asking. I just want to know.
Okay.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
This is still On the Reader News Analysis. You may come through and air opinions and contributions right here on the Reader News Analysis. 083-288-401 is the number in studio.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have a capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura, and I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. Mm. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past. Mm. And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. The John Pandeni constituency has handed over equipment worth 277,000 Namibian dollars to 18 small and medium enterprises, also known as SMEs, beneficiaries under the Income Generating Activities, IGA. S program for the current financial year. Now, the initiative aims to provide SMEs with sustainable equipment to strengthen their businesses while contributing to economic empowerment and sustainable livelihoods for individuals and the broader community. According to the constituency official, the support forms part of ongoing efforts to create self-employment opportunities and stimulate local economic development at grassroots levels. Now, joining me in studio now is Councillor of John Pandeni Constituency, Councillor Shalukeni John Monde. Good afternoon, sir. And welcome to On the Radar News Analysis.
Good afternoon, Dafa.
It's a pleasure to have
and
you.
And to the listeners as well.
Mm. Now, Councillor, I understand that 18 small and medium enterprises yesterday benefited under the Income Generating Activities program. Kindly just tell us more about this program and also just coming from you, obviously, the aim of it.
Yes, the aim of this program is to assist our community members, those who are already in business and those who are aspiring and are motivated to be self-employed. And we mostly concentrate on those ones who did TVET programs like bricklayers, welders, plumbers, in those that are also in beauty business. And for us, it helped us a lot because we know that people think that the constituency councillor, original councillors, are just there to give food. But although sometimes we have these platforms or programs that we can assist the mostly vulnerable groups of the society and poverty-stricken community members. Now we try to make sure that they are equipped with skills to do business so that they are able to sustain their livelihoods and so that they also don't come back always to our offices looking for food.
Mm-hmm.
Because as we are leaders, we need to instill the discipline of our community members, resident citizens, to be self-supportive, to find food for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
This program is an annual program that we always invite the public members, especially those ones who are doing business. And there are criteria also to be followed. It's not only that you come and you apply, you get. There's a committee that also do the evaluation. The Constituent Development Committee is also involved. Our administrator or staff members also go out and assess your application on the ground, see what you have put in the application really makes sense, and also speaks to what we have today provided in the application form.
Mm.
For us, it's a good program, although there are those ones that are trying to shame it, but the community members that are and this program for information has come a long way. And we'll continue running this program because we see the impact that it's making to the community members that are really serious to upgrade and also to expand their businesses. We know our households that are dependent on some of these small businesses.
Yeah.
And for us, we are there for the communities. We are there to assist them, to capacitate them to run their business successfully.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Now, among those equipment that I did see yesterday for the beneficiaries, I did see some God sings, along with poles and also, steels, I guess, perhaps maybe to make a tuck shop. I'm not so sure. That's just from myself, assessing. And then, of course, there was an upcoming media, young lady who benefited from a camera worth, I think, about $16,000 Namibian. And then, of course, some other people. It's just many different, equipments that were given, handed out to them. Now, Councillor, is it that, let me not say for you specifically, is it that the constituency office, decides what to buy for, particular business, or how exactly, on what merits, on what criteria do you actually stand on in terms of buying equipment for a particular business that gets the beneficiary?
Just as I said earlier, we call out, or we send out an invitation.
Mm-hmm.
It's always open from November each financial year. And the invitation has a criteria to say you must already have a business, existing business, or the business proposal must be a good one.
Yeah.
Once we have received the applications, we go up and do a visit to your business to see what we are doing.
Okay.
Now, the polls you saw and some zinc sheets, this gentleman wants to do chicken farming.
Mm.
The other lady with the camera, she's a journalist, she and they are also in what you call maybe graphic something.
Indeed, so, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so based on the application, we then say, fine, you want us to assist you with this type of equipment, because you must, the needs of assistance is coming from the applicant.
Mm-hmm.
You know your needs from what you stand, because there are some people want to buy machines and they're expensive. Mm. They cannot go and take out a loan.
Okay.
For this specific equipment or materials. And they need just a little bit of boost. So that's why we come in now. And you are the ones to go and scout for the quotations or for the look for your materials. As long as that shop, wherever you're going to buy, must comply with the procurement criteria of the government, of the Procurement Act. Yes. So we don't just buy from any shop. If you use your shop, that's not, we request that the shop must also give us the document that they are in good standing with the number, good standing, so it's with all those things we require.
Mm-hmm. So in other words, I, the applicant, I'm the one that suggests what I need for my business.
Yes.
Mm. Okay. Now, Councillor, also, does perhaps the constituency, or does the Councillor's office make follow-up visits to those businesses that become beneficiary of the IGA? Do they make follow-up to see, perhaps are they still struggling with certain things that they perhaps need help, or perhaps also need some sort of, counseling in terms of how to, maybe generate more? Of course, it's an existing business, but is there follow-up also that is made in that regard?
Yes, surely we do follow-ups for information. All the programs that we run at the council are run backed up by the policies that we have devised for each program. We have a department that we call Directorate of Planning. Under planning, we have a Deputy Director of Monitoring and Evaluation. This division is entrusted to make sure that all the programs that we are implementing, there must be a report, they must be monitored, they must be evaluated, and so that we also assess the impact that is derived from such programs.
Mm, actually. Okay. Finally and lastly, Councillor, and I will definitely let you go to attend to other commitments. In terms of this initiative that is given out to the people, how do you make call outs for the people, especially for the constituency of John Pandeni constituency, to ensure that they partake and they submit their applications?
You know, we always use all the media platforms. We also
Councillor, I never actually heard you advertising with us on Eagle FM, so you say media.
Yeah. Except Eagle FM. We mostly use the state media, like NBC and all the vernacular languages. We send out notifications inviting aspiring beneficiaries. And then we also use our website.
Mm-hmm.
We also use our platforms. We have too many WhatsApp platforms within the constituency. And we, all the platforms, social media platforms that we can use, we are not limited, but it was because we want every resident of the constituency to
benefit,
partake and benefit if they qualify.
Okay. Thank you so much, Councillor. We sure hope that for the next financial year, you'll also reach out to get Eagle FM and come and tell the people here so they can hear about it, and all people from your constituency will be able to know and partake. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much for reaching out to us, and all the best for you as well.
Okay. Thank you, Councillor.
Thank you.
And then you heard it from Councillor of John Pandeni constituency, that is Councillor Shalukeni John Monde. Now we've also reached out to Councillor of Samora Machel constituency, Councillor Nestor Kalola, on the progress of their income generating activities, IGAs, towards small and medium enterprises. Let's take a listen to that. A very good afternoon to you, Mr. Nestor Kalola, and welcome to On the Radar News Analysis.
Thank you very much, madam.
Now, Councillor, yesterday I attended an event at the John Pandeni constituency for the implementation of the Income Generating Activities Program for the current financial year. And they handed over equipment to small business enterprises to the tune of 277,000 Namibian dollars. Now, I was wondering, because I'm from Samora Machel constituency myself, and I don't remember actually hearing somewhere where businesses has been called out to give their proposals in order for them to be beneficiaries of equipment being handed over to them. Can they get into that for us, Councillor?
Thank you very much. And thank you very much, maybe, for my listener whom are listening now to hear where Samora Machel are standing when it comes to IGA, which means it's an income-generating activities. Madam, Samora Machel is a constituency like the other constituencies.
Yeah.
That benefit is also Samora Machel included, like the others. And let me say, since from 2021, when I took over the office of Samora Machel constituency, I have been doing an announcement where the small business, they come and then apply. And we used to do an announcement on all different radios of different language.
Mm-hmm.
And then people, they has been apply. Then I had pay my staff member, they has been told me that 51 applicants, they has been apply to benefited from that.
Okay.
And then after the assessment and everything, they said 11 people there has been, or let's say 11 applicants there has been qualified, or they are qualified,
mm-hmm.
then 40 applicants are not qualified. It was in 2021. And then from there, I say, okay, you said 11 are qualified out of 51. And then can I able to see those 40 applications which are applicants which are not qualified? I need to see the application forms so that I can able to equate myself with what really is happening, whether they really not qualified or what. I want to see it. Then unfortunately, my staff member, they failed to broaden me those applicants or applications for those applicants. And then from there, I decided by saying, okay, now why should I have to approve 11 applications which I am not aware if they are only the one who are qualified while 40 are not qualified? While the staff member, they failed or they declined to bring me those 40 application forms, I decided to say, okay, let me treat all Namibians equal. Because when I'm in this office, I'm in this office to represent all of the residents of this particular constituency,
yeah,
irrespective of whoever the person is. Then if now I approve this 11, what about the rest of 40? Are they qualified or not? Then I realize that it looks like here there is a personal interest.
And there's no transparency.
Then I make a decision by saying, I am not going to approve any application. All of those 11 applications, I'm not going to approve them. Then let me divert this fund better to the benefit or to the project which is benefiting all Namibians, irrespective whoever a person is. How do I do? I divert in that project to come up with a project of the CCTV camera. When it might be, if you, even if you go to Commerce Regional Council and even to the city police, they can tell you, I'm the first councillor come up with the project of the CCTV camera, because I realize that for us to reduce the crime, let me step in. And then when it comes to crime, crime doesn't mean only for one person or for whoever. Every person can able to be affected.
Regardless of constituency.
In our constituencies, they can able to be affected. Then I decided to consult the city police and the Namibian police for them to give me the statistic of the crime in my constituencies. Then I step in, we buy the CCTV camera, we see that the fund which used to be given for the small business, now I divert it to that project so that those projects can benefit all of the residents of their constituencies. Because whoever we're going to come across to that hotspot area, then it's a benefit to him or to her if any attack comes to him or her. Then that is the first year, the year 2021. And then in 2022, again, I say, since the situation, I saw it already in the office, let me again come in. I have to divert this money again to the another project, technology. You know, our people, as we know, parents, they cannot afford. But most of the things, whatever, even maybe a person want to apply the job, or a person maybe try to study, then you need the technology. I say, no, let me come in so that they can a bit reduce this gap from our people and to the people who are living in the in those, even let's say maybe in town or so, because as we are a bit having an informal settlement, and our people also, they are most a bit people of lower income. Then I buy the computer, or I order Commerce Regional Council to use that money to buy the computer for Greenwell Matongo Community Library. The computer will going to be used by the resident of the constituency, whoever maybe they want to go to internet or their study, or maybe they applying the job or whatsoever.
Councillor, how many computers?
14 computers. They are there in Greenwell Matongo Community Library. If anyone wants to find it out, just go there. Get the librarian. She's going to tell you that this computer, 14 new computers, were bought by Commerce Regional Council under the leadership of Councillor Carola for Samora Michelle. They are there. So, and then last year, it's when I said, no, let me try now, because I come up with many projects, not only those one which I'm mentioning. There are many projects. I cannot able to finish all of the projects. There are many. Then from there, last year, I said, no, let me try again to test their mind again. Let me give that opportunity. The people, they must apply. And then from there, I will see how they will come up. Last year, when they come up, no, that one, it was really perfect. What they did, they go do all of the research, all of the application. They selected those, they said that they are qualified, but they see that the rest also, they are qualified, but due to the amount of money, the amount of money we have, which is only 270, cannot be enough to all of the people. But at least 23 people or 23 beneficiaries, they qualified. Then we say, okay, bring, I say, okay, bring the application forms, all of them for the CDC to see and then assess. They did it. They assess all of the application forms, they bring it to us, and then those who are qualified, and then from there, say, okay, no, we agree with them, let me approve this one. And then the remaining one, they may try again by next year, which is this year. Okay, this year again, those 23 applicants, mm-hmm. they benefited already. They are already given their materials.
Mm-hmm.
This year again, we sit, we announce it, and then from there, the applicants that they apply, they were 181 this for this year. And then out of that 181, we end up, after their assessment, 47 applicants, they were going to benefit from this year benefit,
mm.
which means I expecting maybe before November or maybe before end of November to hand over those material to the owner. They are 47 mm-hmm. for this year.
Mm-hmm.
That's where we are or where we stand when it comes to small business income in our constituencies. It's where we stand.
Mm-hmm. Kantela, yes. you spoke about 14 computers that were bought for the Greenwell Community Library. Now, I did hear of some people speaking about there's no Wi-Fi at the library. Is that the case? And when can we see it being resolved?
Well, thank you very much. When it comes to Wi-Fi, it's unfortunately the library, that building itself, it's for municipal or it's controlled by municipality.
Actually.
And then as far as I has been engaged the librarian,
mm-hmm.
they have been told as apparently the municipality, they're supposed to unlock their code which they has been using for those for the internet or for the Wi-Fi there on the library.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Ministry of Education, they were ready to install the Wi-Fi so that those computers can able to be connected
yeah.
and the rest of the computer in the library. Because the library itself is controlled by the ministry, but the building is for the municipality.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's where now the things are stuck. Now the municipal, they don't want to come on board, maybe to come and then unlock their code. And then while the ministry here, they are just expecting them to be given the green light by the municipality. I think somebody maybe can able to make a follow-up from the municipal and then tell when maybe they can come and then unlock whatever the code which they have in the library so that the ministry can come on board. Ministry of Education, they are ready.
Mm-hmm.
That's why he has been working together with them that I bought a computer and then they must come and then bring in the Wi-Fi. And they were ready and still they are ready.
Mm-hmm.
To install the Wi-Fi.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Councillor, thank you so much for making time for us and offering us the explanation in that regard.
Thank you very much, madam.
Okay.
And thank you.
There you had it from Councillor Nesto Kalola. He is the councillor for the Samora Machel constituency, just answering questions in terms of the IGA's income generating activities for his constituency. Now, of course, this is on the Radar News Analysis. You can come through and air opinions and contributions right here on 083-288-401. As for now, we pause right here and take a trip to the marketplace. Pull back shortly with more news. Stay with us.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the R.
Great news! Imba just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Imba? Get all exclusive features for just $36 Namibian a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything Imba has to offer at an unbeatable price. Imba, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel
anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. Now, before we move on, I sure hope that you have grabbed Wednesday's edition of the Villager e-paper, which is still available. Now, yesterday's edition covers the following headlines. Namibia lacks up-to-date picture of skills landscape. Now, plans for regional processing centers molted. Private sector must join in housing provision, says urban minister. Dama East school budget diverted to other schools, says residents of Dama East. Now, get your copy and read on the best economic news and more. Also, stay informed by subscribing to the Eagle Media House WhatsApp channel and receive a tri-weekly dose of economic, social and community news absolutely free of charge. That is out every Monday, Wednesday and Friday. All you have to do is send a text message to 081-200-4144 and never miss an update. Eagle Media House, keeping you informed. Now, of course, let's pause here again. I'll be back to tell you what's making headlines in terms of trading economics and on Namibian currency compared to other currencies.
Great news! Imba just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Imba? Get all exclusive features for just 36 Namibian dollars a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything Imba has to offer at an unbeatable price. Imba, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
Welcome back. And now $1 today will get you 17 Namibian dollars and 54 cents. €1 is equals to 20 Namibian dollars and 50 cents. $1 Australian dollar is equals to 11 Namibian dollars and 59 cents. And £1 sterling is equals to 23 Namibian dollars and 72 cents. £1 Botswana pula is equals to $1 Namibian dollar and 31 cents. £1 Kenyan shilling is equals to 0.14 Namibian dollars. Now moving on to trading economics, we're starting off in South Africa. Now manufacturing output in South Africa shrank by 0.7% year on year in July 2025, following a 1.9% rise in June and broadly in line with analysts' forecast of a 0.6% decline. Now, this ends a two-month streak of growth. The largest negative contributions came from the basic iron and steel, non-ferrous metal products, and machinery division, which fell 3.3% and subtracted 0.7 percentage points. And the wood products, paper, publishing and printing division, which declined 1.8% and subtracted 0.2 percentage points. Now, on a seasonally adjusted monthly division, which monthly basis, pardon me, industrial output fell by 0.5% in July after an upwardly revised 0.4% increase in June. Seasonally adjusted manufacturing production grew by 2.5% in the 3 months ended July 2025 compared with the previous 3 months. The Central Bank of Turkey cut its benchmark interest rate by 250 basis points to 40.5% in its September meeting, now more than market expectations of a softer cut of 41%. The move follows signs of slowing underlying inflation in August, though food and services prices continue to pressure inflation. Now, despite stronger than expected second quarter growth, domestic demand remains weak, keeping demand conditions in disinflationary. Now, policymakers stressed that tight monetary policy will stay in place until price stability is achieved, working through demand, exchange rate, and expectation channels. Now, the committee will assess policy rate steps cautiously, guided by inflation trends and interim targets, with room to tighten if inflation deviates significantly. Decisions will aim to secure the medium-term 5% inflation target within a predictable, transparent, and data-driven framework. In the meantime, the overnight borrowing rate and the overnight cutting rate were also reduced by 25 basis points, that is to 43.5% and 39% respectively. The National Bank of Serbia kept its benchmark interest rate at 5.75%. in its September meeting, citing current and expected inflation, as well as domestic and international economic conditions. Headline inflation accelerated to 4.9% in July, driven mainly by food and non-alcoholic beverages prices, while core inflation remained at 4.7%. Now, the NBS expects inflation to ease in September under temporary government trade regulations and remain within the target range through year-end, with further gradual easing in 2026. Economic activity remains steady, with gross domestic product growth averaging 2% in H1 2025, supported by expansion in services and manufacturing, automotive investments, and infrastructure projects under the Serbia Expo 2027 program. South Africa's current account deficit widened to 82.8 billion rands in the second quarter of 2025 from a revised 47.8 billion rand in the previous three-month period. Now, it was the largest current account shortfall since the fourth quarter of 2023, as the trade surplus narrowed further to 177.1 billion rands, that is from 211.0 billion rands in the first quarter. Now, at the same time, the deficit on the services, income, and current transfer account widened slightly to 259.9 billion rands, that is from 258.9 billion rands, driven by a larger income account deficit, even as the deficits in the services and current transfer accounts narrowed. Now, the current account deficit as a ratio of gross domestic product, that is GDP, widened to 1.1% in the second quarter from an upwardly revised 0.6% in the preceding quarter and above analyst expectations of 0.7%. Now, that's what we had for you today in terms of trading economics. We pause here right now and take a trip to the marketplace. When we do return, we'll be telling you what's making headline in terms of news beyond the borders of Namibia. Do stay tuned. Also partake in the news analysis on 083-288-401. Now, we pause here, take a trip to the marketplace as we await your call.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I am planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Get all your essential products for just 99 Namibian dollars at USave. 1 kilogram each of Rice King Rice, Top School or Bokomo Super Maize Meal, Super King White or Brown Sugar, 500 grams Pasta Polana or Pasta King, and 750 milliliters Light Brand Sunflower Seed Oil. That's 5 products for only 99 Namibian dollars. You save, I save. Yes, we all save at USave. Velvetshire University, new short courses available. Faculty of Law, Commerce and Education, School of Law. Programs, Certificate in Workplace Dispute Resolution. Admission requirements, Grade 12 Senior Certificate or equivalent NQF Level 4 with a minimum of 18 points in 5 best subjects and a D symbol in English, or Grade 11 Certificate with a minimum of 22 points in 5 subjects and a D symbol in English, plus 2 years relevant industry experience is required. Certificate in Telecommunications Policy and Regulation. Admission requirements, Grade 12 Senior Certificate or equivalent NQF Level 4 with a minimum of 18 points in 5 best subjects and a D symbol in English, or Grade 11 Certificate with a minimum of 22 points in 5 subjects and a D symbol in English, plus 2 years relevant industry experience is required. Now, cost is 5,500 Namibian dollars. Fees can be paid in 3 installments. Application deadline, 5th September 2025. Apply now at www.wu.edu.na. Velvetshire University, where everyone is an achiever.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. Mm. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past. Mm. And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. Let's start off in South Africa, where husbands can now legally assume wives' surnames.
The Constitutional Court has delivered judgment on whether Section 26 of the Births and Deaths Registration Act is unconstitutional. And this is insofar as it unfairly discriminates on the basis of gender by failing to afford men the right to assume the surname of women after marriage. Here's SABC News reporter Kenny Mapanga, who joins us from the Constitutional Court. So Kenny, parts of the Births and Deaths Registration Act have been declared unconstitutional. Tell us more on the rationale Justice Theron used around this.
Indeed. Good morning to you, Mxolisi, and to the viewers at home. We have yet another progressive judgment coming out of the Constitutional Court. This time it is in reference to the position women carry in their marriages. We've seen that the Concord has confirmed that declaration of invalidity, apologies, by the Free State High Court against Section 26, subsection 1A to C of the Births and Deaths Registration Act. What that means, Mxolisi, is that men can now assume assume the surnames of their wives. There is no rational, justifiable reason why a woman has to assume the surname of her spouse, her male spouse, but he too cannot assume that spouse's or the female spouse's surname in the alternative. So essentially that declaration of invalidity has been suspended for 24 months. That gives Parliament at least 2 years to remedy that defect, but the couple's concern, that is Jana Joran, Henry van der Merwe, and Jess Donnelly Bornman and Mr. Bornman, have successfully vindicated their constitutional rights to equality and dignity by ensuring that they have the choice, and now many others, to take on their wife's surname should they do so. The analysis that the Constitutional Court employed was the impact that this kind of legislation has on women, and they found that it was an insidious impact because it is rooted in patriarchy and enforcing those colonial gender norms. It has no legitimate government purpose but to place women in an inferior position in marriages once they assume their male spouse's surname. So once again, Olisi, quite a progressive judgment from the Constitutional Court. They found that this legislation has a severe impact on women in marriages and does not serve a legitimate government purpose. So of course, they have successfully confirmed that declaration of invalidity. That means now all in society have a choice, if they choose to do so, to take on the surname of their female spouse. And of course, now women are not placed in a position where they have to lose their identity in marriage. They now can be placed in a position where, should they choose to make their surname the family name, that is now possible because legislation will now support it. Over to you in studio.
And Kenny, while still on it, I heard this is a sort of an interim sort of remedy to this matter, which would now mean that, as you mentioned out there, that Parliament has about 24 months to deal with this matter. Am I correct?
Yes, that is correct. Because Parliament, that is where our lawmakers sit, the Constitutional Court has identified the defect, confirmed the defect. It is now up to Parliament to remedy that defect and choose how they do so, whether that is introducing new legislation or affecting the changes. And of course, that is suspended for 24 months. They're given that period to do so. But because the Constitutional Court has confirmed that declaration of invalidity, that now comes into effect, which means that men can now assume their wives' spouses if they choose to do so. And then, of course, with respect to the applicants, the two couples that brought this bid here to the Constitutional Court, the Department of Home Affairs has to remedy the change in surnames that triggered the application to begin with.
And is that couple present in court today? I'm wondering what their reaction would be if you've managed to touch base with them at this moment.
Well, they were present during the main bid, which was heard in March earlier this year. However, during judgment, they did not come to the court this morning. We know that they're all legal practitioners as well. They may have had other engagements, but I'm sure we'll be able to catch up with them at a later stage to see their reaction to this historic judgment that kind of embodies the constitutional democracy that we enjoy today, that ensures that the right of equality and dignity is afforded to all, particularly women, once they enter marriage. Over to you in studio.
Right, that's Kenny Mapanga working that story. Thanks so much for that update. And at the back of that, we also rehash our question for the day right here on the agenda this morning. At the back of that judgment that was just handed by the Apex Court, we ask you, with the Crown Court that has just handed down the ruling on the spouse order today, do you think husbands should be allowed to...
Now, the Constitutional Court in South Africa did deliver a judgment on whether Section 26, Clause 1A to C of the Birth and Death Registration Act is unconstitutional insofar as it unfairly discriminates on the basis of gender by failing to afford men the right to assume the same name of women after marriage. I don't know how very important this is to women or some men, but nonetheless, okay. Now, moving on, South African statistics observes a surge in online gambling.
Technology has impacted many facets of society and revolutionized many industries. The gambling industry is not exempt, with brick-and-mortar casinos seeing a decline in patrons, while online bookmakers have seen a boom in business. In its recent report on the personal services industry, StatsSA observed that bookmaker and online gambling services experienced a rapid surge in income between 2018 and 2023. Political parties have sounded the alarm around what it calls a runaway gambling crisis. Faiz Mzanzi's National Assembly caucus whip, Magashule Ghana, joins us now for this. Magashule, good evening. Thank you so much for your time. Really do appreciate it. In the last financial year to now, gambling, online gambling in South Africa has seen a up to almost 60 billion rand, a spike to up to almost 60 billion rand in just a single financial year. In fact, Stats SA reports that about half of household income, disposable household income, is spent on gambling and more particularly online gambling in particular. You have sounded the alarm on it, saying that we have a runaway problem, and you've made a legislative suggestion towards solving the problem. That is to say, curtailing very strongly the reach and accessibility of online gambling. But as you and I both know, the lawmaking process in South Africa is arduous and it's long. Can take up to more than two parliamentary terms to get a single piece of legislature passed. What should be done immediately in the interim to stop the bleeding?
Thank you very much, and good evening to you, Oliver, and good evening to the viewers. What can be done without delay? It's advertising regulations, and I'm disappointed that the is taking or is dragging his feet in introducing advertising regulations. That's something that can be done with urgency, because we are having a, you know, like as others now have called it, it's an emergency. It's a pandemic, gambling in South Africa. The stats that
would you not need to pass a legislative amendment for advertising regulations to come into play?
You don't need an amendment to the legislation.
Right, that's
the beauty of it. If there was political will, there was going to be a stringent advertising regulations. Wouldn't be having gambling advertising 6 o'clock in the morning or 7 o'clock when you're driving your children to school. You wouldn't be having advertising during the afternoon drive show when the children are coming back from school. But the minister is dragging his feet, and this has allowed the gambling industry to effectively take over both the industry, but also has taken over the advertising industry. So the majority of spend in the advertising space is gambling. So the industry that's producing or is flighting a lot of billboards is gambling. The advertising that we see on TV, we hear on radio, it's gambling. So these are the things that with a bit of political will can be done. So regulations don't require a change in legislation.
Yeah.
It requires the concurrence of the National Gambling Policy Council for it to come into effect. But what encourages me is that we have met with the Advertising Regulatory Board that have indicated that they've started a process to start working in that space. And obviously, they would like to have a backing of the ministry. And we'll continue pushing. We're not going to stop. We'll go to the Banking Association. We'll go to the payment association, because this industry is touching on so many areas.
Yeah, I mean a trillion rand in turnover revenue for the sector altogether. That's not something I would imagine banks, or at least the transaction fees on that, is not something I would imagine banks to easily walk away from. Advertising is but one thing. And of course, many argue that taking away advertising alone doesn't solve the accessibility problem that exists. It still remains largely accessible, no matter where you are. And it's something more stern, more robust, and a lot more urgent needs to be done. Have you applied your...
Angola bets on oil reforms to drive energy independence.
Three Angolan authorities took an unprecedented decision to leave the Organization of the Petroleum Exporting Countries, OPEC, following an output quarter row. Its mineral resources and petroleum minister said that the country's interests were not being served by the oil cartel. It wanted greater autonomy over its oil production strategy, aiming to increase output and revenue in a competitive global oil market. However, its oil output slipped below 1 million barrels per day for the first time since quitting OPEC last year. But that didn't deter optimism.
We are the number one destination for investors that want to come and interact with the industry, with the government, with the players in the market, be it in the upstream, midstream, downstream sector, and talk about what are the opportunities.
Oil has driven Angola's growth since independence 50 years ago, but corruption has long stifled the sector. Reforms in 2018 marked a significant turning point, enticing investors to sub-Sahara Africa's second-largest oil economy.
We understood the need to attract more investors. That is why the decrees introduced in 2018 were so important. They gave a real boost to the industry by opening up marginal fields, permitting explorations in development areas, and introducing a new gas law.
With billions of dollars in investments pouring in, production output is expected to bounce back. Cabinda Refinery, the first built since independence, has come alive. And a $5 billion investment by industry giant Azule Energy could help increase output back above the 1 million per barrel a day mark.
We're going to see a lot more investments coming in because Angola has not just reformed and stayed, but Angola continues to look at its books and say, what more can we do to continue attracting?
It is not all rosy. Subsidy cuts to absorb costs have already sparked deadly protests, highlighting the pressure on the government to balance reforms with public needs.
We still have millions of Angolans that don't have electricity. A lot don't have access to clean cooking, most of them women. We need to produce oil, get LPG out, and then be able to use it to fix Angolans' problem first, because at the end, you have to take care of citizen Angola before you take care of global citizen.
For Angola, it's a pivotal moment. New refineries are planned for Lobito and Soyo as the country pushes to become a regional energy hub that will boost energy security, jobs, and growth for a population that has yet to experience full benefits of its oil wealth. Julie Shara, CGTN.
Meanwhile, Zambia tops Southern Africa in aquaculture with record fishing production.
Has emerged as a leading aquaculture producer in Southern Africa, recording over 89,000 metric tons of fish in 2024, the highest in the region's history. Speaking at a workshop on sustainable aquaculture investment, Acting Permanent Secretary in the Ministry of Fisheries and Livestock, Shadrack Mungalaba, hailed the milestone as a boost to food security and economic growth.
Zambia's aquaculture production has improved so much over the years. For instance, in 2024, Zambia became the best aquaculture production country in Southern Africa by producing 89,342 metric tons of fish. Much more so with the kind of good policy framework that government has put in place and the deliberate support that is being given to not only the farmers, but indeed all the players in the fish value chain.
The Food and Agriculture Organization of the United Nations country representative, Susie Pesi Filippini, praised Zambia's progress.
FAO has a long history on supporting aquaculture development in this country, in line with Zambia's vision for food security and economic diversification.
Meanwhile, Africa Union Development Agency, AUD, and NEPAD Senior Programs Officer Bernice Lynn McLean reaffirmed the agency's commitment to support member states in embedding agriculture financing priorities into national plans.
For our part, AUD and NEPAD will continue to support member states and regional economic communities to embed aquaculture financing priorities into the national agri-food systems investment plans.
Delegates from across Africa also agreed to co-develop a prototype framework to guide countries in strengthening aquaculture and agriculture financing. This will align with broader continental strategies. I'm Chintumana Mbo reporting for Nais in Lusaka.
Egypt unveils ambitious economic plan targeting 7% growth by 2030.
Authorities have rolled out a new economic development blueprint. Among other things, it has a very ambitious target, a GDP growth rate of 7% a year by 2030, while also significantly increasing the role of the private sector in the economy. Now, the plan sets a series of pretty ambitious quantitative targets over the next 5 years. Among other things, raise the total investment inflows to 18% of GDP, up from 15.2% in the current fiscal year. In line with the government's goal of empowering the private sector, the plan aims to raise the share of private sector investment in total investment to around two-thirds of that by 2030 from 60% right now, and also raise the private sector share of investment flows as a percentage of GDP to nearly 12% from 9.1% at the moment. It's also aiming for the private sector's contribution to GDP to reach 82% by 2030. Let's bring in Mohamed Elbana. He's a professor of economics and public finance at Manufia University, joining us live on the program tonight. Thank you very much for your time this evening, sir. So Egypt's GDP growth has been under 4%, going all the way back to 2022. The last time it had an annual GDP growth of 7% was all the way back in 2008. How will this plan get growth back to those levels?
Okay, it is my pleasure to be with you from Africa or South Africa and China, the most friend country in Asia. For Egypt, realize 7% growth rate in GDP is not a big deal. As you have mentioned, we realize this growth rate at 2008. What all we need to realize this economic growth is to invest at least 28% of GDP. This is not a big deal because our potential domestic saving could be 20%. So the resources gap, the local or domestic resources gap equal 8%. 8% of GDP, we could depend upon foreign assistance, especially FDI or foreign direct investment. So Egypt must plan for that by raising domestic saving from actual 10% nowadays to 20% the potential domestic saving in Egypt. Many poor countries, many or some poor or lower countries per capita income realize more than 20, especially realize more than 30% of GDP domestic saving, especially in South Asia. So Egypt could reach to 20% domestic saving plus 8% foreign assistance, especially FDI, if we realize 28
right.
Saving and invested, so we can make growth rate at 7%. At this time, Egypt could double its GDP within only 10%.
Right. The blueprint that the planning minister unveiled, I believe it was either on Sunday or Monday, Rani Al-Mashat, it also includes restructuring 59 state-owned companies. Will that include the state selling, controlling stakes in these companies? Because that plan seems to have largely stalled since around October 2022. There has been really significant progress in bringing some of these companies, some of which might be owned by the military, into the market.
Yeah. To sell all the shares or transfer the firms from public to private. Privatization could take many shapes, many ways, such as management professionally. So we could restruct the 59 firms, which make some problems in managing their production and employment. we could make them do business well, such as the private sector. Only the government must leave private sector to work. Bureaucracy is very, very dangerous obstacle facing the private sector in Egypt. The government must leave business sector to do business, to expand their business. This is what all we need in Egypt. So we have what we call structuring reform nowadays. If the government could restructure this public firm and make them do business such as private sector, it would.
A discussion on whether Africa can close the gap in carbon markets and climate finance.
All right, then let's pivot back to one of the lead stories at this hour, the Africa Climate Summit. Conversations around emissions trading systems are front and center at that event. Let's bring in Reshma Shah. She's the head of carbon markets at FCT Africa, joining us live on the program tonight. Reshma, thank you for your time this evening. So let's start with a very broad overview of where we stand today. Europe has had a centralized emissions trading system in place since 2005. Are there any regional or national emissions trading systems on the continent here in Africa at the moment?
Yeah, so here looking at the continent at the moment, we don't really have any emissions trading systems. The closest we get is probably around carbon taxation, and the closest of that is South Africa at the moment with its domestic tax position on carbon. There are other countries looking at emissions trading systems, incorporating them within legislation as well as taxation. But at this point in time, we don't have any active emissions trading systems in Africa.
COP29 in Baku, Azerbaijan last year, that ended with a fair bit of controversy. Among other things, it was encouraging developed economies, which are the largest historical greenhouse gas emitters. They're being encouraged to contribute $300 billion a year in climate finance. The idea is to scale that up to $1.3 trillion a year at COP30 in Brazil this year. Where does carbon trading fit into that goal?
Yeah, so that's quite a controversial point at this point in time in the African continent, because a lot of people believe that any sale of carbon credits shouldn't actually be included within the climate finance flow into Africa. However, the money that's actually being included around the development of carbon projects should be counted towards that. And what we're seeing at the moment, which is 3% of climate finance in Africa, that we're not really seeing climate finance more broadly. Forget about the carbon projects. There are a number of initiatives, even as FSD Africa, that we've been running, including our current accelerator, the Carbon Accelerator Program for the Environment, where we're specifically looking at how can we increase this flow of capital, not just from an international perspective, but also local capital mobilization. And I say this is probably going to be one of the key focus areas. If we want to increase mobilization of capital around areas such as carbon, that not will have an effect just on climate, but can have a significant effect around nature biodiversity, but also around communities and economic development. And so this equation should not just be looking at the flow of capital, but should be looking at all those elements coming together at the same time as well.
Is part of the problem the question around a lack of transparency and credibility around these carbon offsets that are being sold into the open market? Because that would partly explain the resistance that we're seeing from some communities who will say, well, we have all this land, we've been living in this carbon sink for X number of decades or centuries or whatever the period of time is, but all this talk about carbon offsets doesn't really make sense unless that money is actually having a tangible impact and we can actually see what it's doing on the ground.
Yeah, so there's definitely an element of transparency and lack of transparency in many cases. There's also an area where we need to have more detailed guidelines and regulations that actually bring into account what is required from a benefit-sharing perspective. And this is some of the work we've been doing at FSD in certain countries where we've been putting in quite detailed guidelines, working with communities to understand that, as well as benchmarking. But I think in addition to transparency and having the right regulations in place, it's also a value equation, because what's being shared has to be of value. So we have to increase the pricing around carbon so that there's more revenue from carbon revenue, and there's more to be shared, not just with the community, but also the project developer, which in most cases is taking on a significant risk. So we should be looking at the distribution element, but we should also be looking at the value equation as well.
One last question for you, because back in April, the now former head of the African Development Bank, Kinume Adesina, argued that carbon sinks in Africa are being grossly undervalued, with emission permits here costing around 1% of what they would in Europe. I believe the number he figured he cited was about $3 to emit a ton of for carbon offset here in Africa versus around 200 euros over in the EU. Would using emission permit prices in the EU ETS as a sort of floor rate, would that be one way of solving that price arbitrage problem?
Yeah, so a floor rate can solve that problem, but that just gives you the minimum. We should also be looking at what components go into the value equation and the pricing for carbon. And I think when you look at Africa as a continent, it's not just the carbon emission side that is important and the carbon sinks, but also the effects that it has around nature, that has more adaptation and resilience and more future aspects of climate, but also the core benefits that come around community and conservation. And I think all those need to come into it, not just in respect of the floor, but also in terms of what is the actual value of carbon credits.
Now for news beyond the borders, manhunt for Charlie Kirk killer continues as Trump says it is a dark moment for America.
The hunt for the killer or killers of Charlie Kirk, a prominent right-wing activist who was a close ally of President Trump, is continuing. It's after he was shot dead at a university campus on Wednesday while he was speaking at an event in Utah. Earlier, one person was detained, but they were released after being questioned. No one's currently in custody. Mr. Kirk had been taking part in an outdoor debate at the university in Utah when he was killed by a single bullet. He was an outspoken supporter of President Trump, someone who was part of his inner circle, and was credited with helping the Republicans rally their youth vote. President Trump has described Mr. Kirk as a martyr for truth and freedom. And the president blamed what he described as the radical left for fostering a climate of political violence. He said the shooting was a dark moment for America. Well, footage from the shooting has been posted on social media showing the incident on campus. Well, we've paused the video at the moment that gunfire was heard before crowds scattered. Officials believe the shot may have been fired from a roof. Our North America correspondent, Neda Torfik, is at the university and she updated us on that situation there.
Orem police tell me that they are very much still investigating the campus, and we have seen police cars kind of patrolling and going across campus. You'll see perhaps behind me some cars that were left here when people were trying to flee to safety, because earlier police were escorting people off of campus, so some have been returning to collect their belongings to get back their cars. But at the moment, it doesn't seem yet as if there is a massive breakthrough in this case. This intense manhunt is still underway. We were told earlier that authorities were going door to door to ask residents for any tips, because while there were two people of interest, as the authorities called them, that were questioned and then released, they do not yet have a suspect in custody. Remember, authorities say that they are going through security footage, which is very grainy. They believe the suspect was wearing all dark clothing and likely fired that single fatal shot from a rooftop near where Charlie Kirk was under that tent. So they are doing their best to get the suspect in custody. But at the moment here in the community, we've seen some vigils pop up at the hospital where Charlie Kirk was pronounced dead. But people are still really just coming to terms with the fact that they say their small town is now the scene of what many find to be an incredibly gruesome and shocking act of political violence. Very interesting, because in the immediate aftermath, we saw both Democrats, Republicans, all the former living presidents put out statements, really heartfelt statements to Charlie Kirk's family, his wife, his two young children, just 1 and 3 years old. And they really expressed the need.
And we with that, we have now come to the conclusion after this episode of On the Radar News Analysis. Do stay tuned now for the Voters Education Program brought to you by Bishop Lucas Katenda. From Indafa Happy Juju, it is goodbye and have yourself a wonderful Thursday ahead.